This is Scott Becker with the Becker's Healthcare Podcast. I'm thrilled today to be joined by Tim Maloney. Tim is the Vice President of Payer Relations with UC Health. He's going to talk to us about what works with payer relationships, what doesn't, a little bit more. He's had long experience in dealing with payers. He doesn't view them as the dark side, but does have to deal with them. Tim, can you take a moment and introduce yourself?
Yeah, thanks, Scott. So as you said, I'm the Vice President, Payer Relations for UC Health. UC is the University of Cincinnati, not to be confused with the University of Colorado, my friends there, California, et cetera. And so the University of Cincinnati's healthcare system is the Greater Cincinnati's region academic healthcare system, closely aligned and part of the University of Cincinnati, which is, I have to point out, the University of Cincinnati's College of Medicine is the first west of the Alleghenies. We have four facilities, a medical group of 800 some doctors who are made up almost entirely of the faculty of the University of Cincinnati College of Medicine. I have a team that negotiates managed care contracts on behalf of the entire system. So Medicare plans, Medicaid plans, commercial plans, et cetera. And I've been doing this for 8 years now, which is hard for me to believe. Time has flown by.
So a couple sort of starting questions. Has the world of peer relations gotten more complex over the last 5 years or less complex? More or less payers to deal with?
I'm going to say that I think it's more complex, even though there are less payers to deal with, in the sense that there are fewer companies. We deal primarily with four national companies and a regional, so five payers, and that's for commercial and Medicare, and some of those payers are in the Medicaid space as well. Ohio is a managed Medicaid state. Almost the entire Medicaid benefit is administered by five plans. So in one sense, we don't really deal with a whole lot of managed care plans, but I think that managed care and payers it's become more complicated because there are ever more self-funded plans, which those benefits can change. There are more niche kind of networks out there. And so from that standpoint, maybe it's more complicated than it used to be.
In most states, from the commercial side, even though there's four big national players, and sometimes there's local ones, and there's not, typically there's one or two that's dominant in any state. Is that the case in Ohio where you're at, or is it really spread out between the four big national players?
No, I think that's right. I mean, I can speak for Greater Cincinnati and for us. There are, we'll just stick with the four big players, and really the way that works is there are two that are sort of running up in front of the other two. There's kind of a gap. And even within those two, there's one that's got a decent sized lead on the other. So sort of two dominant and then two that are a little bit behind, but still significant.
Over time, you would hear systems have big falling outs with their payers. It'd be widely publicized. There's been some famous ones. You mentioned the Allegheny border. You know, several years ago, there was the big falling out between the Highmark plan in Pennsylvania and the UPMC system that led Highmark and I think West Penn to become partners there. You don't seem to hear about these major fallouts at the moment between peers and health systems. Has the relationship become less combative, more combative? What is it a win-win relationship? What does relationships look like today between payers and big systems?
I think they're complicated, but I think, at least in my experience, you're right. I worked, before being in the position I'm in now, I worked for a larger system that was going through a turnaround. They had formed and lost a lot of money, and brought a turnaround team came in, and I came in with them as part of that team. And it was confrontational. We had big market share, and we really tried to just drive the terms of the agreements. And if we couldn't get what we wanted, we didn't hesitate to threaten going out of network. UC Health doesn't do that. You know, our values are patients first. We highly value access. We want to be here for the patients who need us because we provide services that aren't available within the region. And I think that's I also think I see that in talking to colleagues from other big systems that have dominant market share, who say things now like, you know, we really want to try to figure out how we can, you know, reduce the cost of care, and find ways to be innovative, improve quality, reduce cost, and do take risk that I don't think that they were willing to take years ago. So my guess would be that, generally speaking, that relationships are better in that sense. The other thing, though, I would say on that topic quickly, and it may lead to something else we're going to talk about, is that, and it varies by plans, but as there's been consolidation and as the major players have gotten bigger, some plans in this market, we have a strong local team here in Ohio or even here in Cincinnati that we work with, and those are good partnering relationships. Where you don't have that with some of the big nationals, and not to be critical of anybody, I mean, but where decisions are made somewhere else, it can be complicated, it can be difficult to get things done, and those relationships are a little less satisfying.
Thank you. And talk for a moment about payer relationships, negotiation with payers. What do you think tends to work versus what doesn't work? A couple thoughts there.
Well, I really do think, you know, that, and again, here at UC Health, and when I came in here, it was a new CEO came in, and his message was, you know, we have to be accessible and we have to work with payers. And I had come from an environment where I was used to, you know, a lot of table pounding and that kind of thing. And what, somewhat to my surprise, what's really has worked is building those relationships. And it has. As I said, there are people here in this local market who I know. We can get things get done. And the negotiations, whether it's renegotiating a network participation agreement, you know, the whole thing in its entirety, or whether it's working through some sort of a dispute or a problem over payment or over getting patients access to care, things tend to get done. And where you don't have those relationships for whatever reason, those close relationships with people who can make decisions, then things don't happen. If I could just real quickly, Scott, at the old job, I had developed a pretty bad relationship with a guy from one of the big plants here in the market. And when I came to UC Health, we went out to lunch and got to know each other. And it's been remarkably helpful.
I mean, so the relationship part of this, at the end of the day, it really is. There's big numbers, there's big data, there's everything. But at the end of the day, it really does involve people as well. And it's much easier to communicate data and work things out if there's real relationships. And I've never heard of a situation where what you just mentioned is at some point an important part of the long-term relationship amongst big businesses. Even though you're big businesses, this having lunch and actually talking to each other is so important for developing startups, starting to develop some common ground. Is that a fair statement?
Yeah, I guess people are people. I think I would have said, you know, years ago, I would have said, you know, right is right and wrong is wrong, and the numbers tell the story. And you know, let's just get down to it. I'm right on this point, and et cetera. But people are people, and getting to know the other side and appreciate them, and just having some trust, I guess, is really what it comes down to. Because I think in this business, and you know it, and I know it, is particularly people who've worked for a long time on the provider side or a long time on the payer side, you can develop some bad presumptions about the motives of the people that you're dealing with. And so just getting to know somebody personally, I think, helps to break down some of those barriers. And it has worked out in the last few years for me, for sure.
When you look at the coming years, and what do you look at as a person in charge of payer relations, and it's obviously a much more complex world than it used to be, even though there's fewer payers, each relationship is far more important to the long-term success of the system and the economics of the system. What do you view as sort of top three priorities as you look at your business and what you're doing the next 6 to 12 months or so?
Well, one, we have a couple of major relationships that are up for renewal, so we'll be negotiating those in the coming year, and we are currently now. So that's a high priority, and you know, when you include the several hospitals and the multi-specialty group, it's a complicated task. And so we'll devote a lot of time to that. And, you know, one of the things that I like to, and we, I'm sure I'm not alone in this, we want to really focus on as we have those discussions is just transparency. And not only so because, you know, as a business, we need to sort of be able to predict and understand revenue streams and costs and so forth. But more to the point is making sure we can help people who need our services understand what their, how their benefit works. What are they going to owe out of pocket, et cetera. And I do think it's becoming more and more complicated. It's almost, I think, as an industry, and I mean all of us, providers and payers, it's almost embarrassing how difficult it is to figure out what someone might owe out of pocket for the simplest of service. That's just my personal opinion. So as we try to work through the renewals, we'll be focusing on that. Another big thing, obviously, is COVID. And there, you know, there are a number of things that are going on there. And you know, really top of mind is telehealth. So we'll continue to have discussions with plans and watch Medicare and Medicaid for policies on paying for services, you know, provided virtually. And that's a conversation. It's at some level, you know, I think telehealth, you know, you're talking a lot of times about evaluation and management services, you know, provided on the professional side, which seems like it should be simple, but it's complicated, and it's been something we've had to devote a lot of time to for good reasons. One of the things that we're finding is it's kind of in the weeds, but it's important, is that, you know, our docs are saying a lot of our patients who want to and probably should be treated remotely don't either have the sophistication or the access to technology to engage by virtual visit visually and by audio. And so we spent a lot of time talking to the plans and advocating for coverage of visits, you know, audio only kind of visits and that kind of thing, which is, again, it's really in the weeds, but it's important for the way people get their care. And then I guess the third thing I would say is we'll continue to work with payers on transitioning to, you know, value-based payment. In my mind, value-based payment means all kinds of things. And we're involved on the professional side in shared savings arrangements around closing HEDIS gaps and that kind of thing, which is important. But we also kind of remain interested in episode payment. We think there's opportunity there to incentivize providers to eliminate unnecessary variation in the way care is delivered. And we really are hungry, because we're innovators, we're researchers, we're academics. We're hungry to know how payers see us and where they see opportunities for us to do what we do better.
And let me ask you a follow-up question to everything. We talk a lot about the complexity of plans. We're obviously in a very interesting political climate where lots of people lost their jobs. You've got, you know, part of the country that's very much pushing for universal health care or Medicare for all. You've got almost anybody who's a centrist that still would prefer some kind of public option of some sort. Do you think that Medicare for all or something similar is in the future?
I'm going to say no. It's a great question, and a lot of this answer is me and speaking for kind of what I see. I don't think so, because I think there's been such a move towards self-funded group plans, particularly on the employer side, and I think there are many benefits. So I think the business community would be somewhat opposed because of the flexibility the current system provides. I also, I guess, think that maybe in the big picture, that the majority of people, even if you had a system that was more government controlled, centrally controlled, heavily regulated, it would look something more like Medicare Advantage than Medicare for all in that sense. So you would have a core benefit that was administered by various for-profit plans, because it would allow for more creativity and flexibility. But even that, I think, is down the road some. I guess we'll see who ends up in the White House and in the legislature. But I don't think a single payer, one-size-fits-all Medicare for all is in the offing, I don't think.
At least perhaps not in the near future. But it does seem there's going to be more and more push for universal coverage, particularly with so much disruption in American healthcare and people's coverage through their employers and so forth like that. That's, I mean, just a fascinating situation and time frame. And you know,
movement towards, you know, if there was a reaction to Obamacare and the Affordable Care Act, you know, now there seems to be a reaction back towards that as people have great concerns about the loss of coverage and access and so forth. What a fascinating situation all the way around. And not to prognosticate at all, but it is fascinating, and curious to hear thoughts from you from a, you know, vice president payer relations perspective. You've done a magnificent job at UC Health. It's great to hear your thoughts on this. It's really an interesting evolving world between these relationships between peers and hospitals. You do see less of these total breakdowns and negotiations and more of a needed partnership than you saw probably 5-10 years ago, it seems. Fair statement?
Yeah, I think it's fair, and it's good. It's a good development for sure.
Right, because as you said, when the system has a falling out with the payer, ultimately, the system and payer make up at some point, usually, well, for some period of time, the patient is really lost on benefits and coverage and everything else. And you said it well, that your system has made the position that absent, like, heck freezing over, which can happen, that you're trying to avoid that kind of situation because of the negative impact on your patients.
We don't want to put patients in the middle, whether it's a network negotiation or whether it's a dispute over whether we got paid too little or we haven't been paid at all, or the services were denied, you know, in error. We just don't want to put patients in the middle, which is the right thing to do. It's challenging. Back years and years and years ago, you know, if you got a denial for lack of medical necessity, you billed the patient, you know, it's not covered. So long as you got your advance notice from the patient, but we don't do that at all. And I think it's good, but the relationships come into play there too, because you're going to have to work it out with that plan.
Right. And it's good policy not to do it, because it's really hard to get paid by the patient anyways. And the patient then hates you forever. Doesn't want to go back there because they can't pay this bill. There's a lot of reasons that drive not wanting to be in that spot. I want to thank you, Tim. I appreciate you. You know, you got to a great phone today, which you've not been to for a while. We appreciate it greatly. You taking the time out and the effort to join us today. What a pleasure to visit with you, Tim Maloney. Thank you, sir.
Nice talking to you, and thanks for the opportunity.